Once they all had drinks in hand, they broke up into small groups. Webb went over to the Ransom brothers and began subtly probing them as to what was going on at the Southern Bell. But the men were being exceptionally guarded, which made Webb even more suspicious. Nemo and Romano were looking over Canfield's collection of shotguns, while Billy was standing all alone and scowling back at the grizzly bear in the corner. One by one, all their heads turned when she came down the stairs. If Billy was more overdressed than usual, his wife looked ready to attend a Hollywood premiere. She was as far removed from her normal boots and jeans horse rider persona as it was possible to be. The red gown was long, body-hugging, and ran down to her ankles. The slit came to mid-thigh, right at the precise point where decency was still maintained, but where male fantasy was compelled to sprint. The shoes were open-toed, with ankle straps that, to Webb at least, suggested the concept of bondage, if one hadn't already been thinking about it. The gown was strapless, her bare shoulders tanned and muscular, but retaining much feminine allure, despite the ripples. The gown's bodice was cut low enough to make maneuvering difficult without revealing too much, and perhaps that was the intent. Her hair was piled high on her head, her jewelry tasteful, and the woman required very little makeup. There was complete silence as she descended to them until Webb heard Romano whisper, "Amore," and then he took a gulp of beer.
"Now the party can really get started," said Billy. "What you having, Gwen?"
"Ginger ale."
Billy filled this order. He looked over at the Ransom brothers.
"She's stunning," said Harvey.
"A goddess," echoed Giles. "She's also my wife."
He brought the drink over to her.
"Nemo got himself all banged up with a horse."
Webb noted that she barely glanced in the man's direction.
"So I see."
She nodded toward the Ransoms.
"I don't believe we've met," she said coolly.
Harvey and Giles fell over themselves to see which of them she would meet first. Webb just stood back and watched all this happen. The woman was, without doubt, exceptionally beautiful, yet the way she was dressed, the magisterial way that she was acting, seemed totally out of sync with Gwen Canfield, at least as he had pegged her. Perhaps he had been wrong. He didn't notice Bates at his elbow until the man spoke.
"A going-away party, I understand."
"Yeah, case closed. Good guys win again," Webb added dryly. "Time to get drunk and pat ourselves on the back, at least until all the shit comes back tomorrow."
"We need to talk later. It's important."
Webb glanced at him. To someone who didn't know the man well, Bates looked like he didn't have a care in the world. To Webb, who did know him about as well as anybody, the man seemed ready to implode with whatever he was carrying around inside.
"Don't tell me I won the lottery."
"I guess it's all in how you look at it. I'll let you decide. You want to slip outside and discuss it now?"
Webb eyed the man steadily. So it was pretty bad.
"No, Purse, right now I just want to enjoy my drink and go over and talk to a very beautiful woman."
He left Bates and managed to extract Gwen from the fawning Ransom brothers. They settled in twin club leather chairs, and Gwen cradled her drink in her lap and looked over at her husband.
"He's already been partying hard for about 6 hours."
"So I see."
He looked her over without seeming to. At least he thought so until she shot him a glance.
"A little different attire than you're used to, I know," she said.
Her cheeks reddened slightly at this remark.
"Hey, you got it flaunted.
I'm just glad there aren't any other women here, because they'd really be out of their league. They wouldn't just be wallflowers, they'd be part of the wall, as far as the men here are concerned."
She patted his hand.
"You're sweet. The fact is, I'm about as uncomfortable in this dress as I can be. Worried that I'm going to fall out any second and embarrass myself, and my feet are already killing me. These Italian shoes are pretty to look at, and absolutely impossible to wear if your feet are over a size 4.
"So why the get-up, then?"
"Billy picked it out for me." He's not the sort of man who tells his wife what to do or where, she added quickly. Quite the contrary. I usually pick his clothes out. But he wanted me to look really knock-'em-dead, he said.
Webb raised his glass.
Consider your mission accomplished.
But why? I don't know, Webb. I really don't know what's going through his head right now.
Maybe it has something to do with that damn tape. Again, I'm sorry.
Gwen just shook her head.
It's not just that. This has been brewing for some time. Billy's been changing over the last few months or so, and I'm not sure why.
To Webb, it seemed like the woman did know why, but wasn't to the point where she was going to reveal it to a semi-stranger like him.
His behavior has been becoming more and more bizarre.
He looked at her curiously.
How so?
Well, he's become obsessed with his stuffed animals. Always down there, messing around. My God, that is the most repulsive thing.
It is pretty gruesome.
And he's been drinking hard, even for him.
She looked at Webb and spoke in a lower voice.
Do you know what he told me while we were getting dressed?
She took a sip of her ginger ale.
He said that they should put all the heads of the Free Society members up on poles and parade them around, like they used to do hundreds of years ago.
Why? To send a message?
No.
They both looked up and saw Billy standing there. He downed the rest of his whiskey.
No, you do it because the best place to put your enemies is right in front of you, so you know exactly where they are all the time.
That's not always easy to do, commented Webb.
Billy smiled through his drink glass.
That's right, and that's why folks' enemies get the drop on 'em more often than not.
It was just a quick glance, but Webb was almost certain that Billy looked at Nemo straight when he said this.
Billy held up his glass. Ready for a fresh one?
I'm still working on this one.
Well, let me know. Gwen, you ready for a real libation?
Dressed this way in a room full of men, I think I need to keep my wits about me tonight, she said with a coy smile.
For the record, Webb noted her husband didn't return the smile. Right before they went up to dinner, Webb heard a scream and looked over to its source. The gun cabinet was swung open, revealing the secret room. And Harvey and Giles were both holding their chests after having been surprised by Billy's slave mannequin. And the man himself was leaning against the wall, laughing so hard he was gagging. Webb just had to smile. After dinner, coffee, and snifters of brandy that Billy insisted everybody try, they all took their leave. Gwen gave Webb a hug, and he felt her soft breasts push into his own hard chest. Her fingers seemed to cling to him a beat too long. He didn't know exactly how to take that, and so all he managed to say was goodbye. They went outside and straight climbed in his truck and one-armed it back to his house. A limo pulled up in the front circle, and Harvey and Giles Ransom piled inside. They had both made fools of themselves over Gwen, Webb had thought, but she had taken it with good graces. She was no doubt upstairs right this minute, slipping out of the painful shoes and the uncomfortable dress. In fact, she was probably naked right now, and Webb felt himself glancing toward the upstairs windows. In hopes of what, he asked himself. A glimpse? It didn't happen. Bates came up to him and Romano.
Romano, Webb and I need to talk.
The man said it in such a tone that all Romano did was turn and walk toward the carriage house. Webb and Bates faced off.
Okay, Webb said. What's the deal?
Bates told him, and Webb took it silently until the man finished.
What about Romano? Asked Webb.
Buck didn't mention him, so I'm assuming he's okay.
Let's keep it that way.
I don't know what to do, Webb. I'm caught between a rock and a hard place.
No, you're not. I'll make it easy for you. I'll resign.
Are you shitting me?
It's time for me to move on, Purse. Do something else. I'm not getting any younger, and to tell you the truth, I'd like to find out what it's like having a job where people aren't shooting at you.
We can fight this, Webb. Winters doesn't have the final say on this.
I'm tired of fighting, Purse.
Bates just looked at the man helplessly.
I didn't want it to end this way.
Me and Romano will finish up here, and then I'll be moving on.
You know the heat this is going to generate with what happened with the freeze. And with you leaving HRT, the timing of that will make everyone assume you're the scapegoat. It's going to get dicey. The media will come after you. In fact, it's already starting.
There was a time when that would have bothered me, but not now.
The man stood there quietly for a few seconds, as many years of fighting the good fight together suddenly had abruptly come to an end for them, and it seemed neither of them was prepared for it. Webb finally turned and walked away. Chapter 50. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning. The only movements at East Winds were the horses in the pastures and the wildlife in the encroaching forest. Then came footsteps that crept along the path leading through the trees. There was one light on in the house, and a man's silhouette was stark in the outline of the window. Nemo Strait held a cold beer can against his injured shoulder, grimacing as the frosty metal hit the damaged skin. He wore a t-shirt and boxer shorts. His thick, muscular legs had split the fabric at the thigh. He lay on his bed, picked up the semi-automatic pistol there, and deftly loaded the gun's magazine. But with only one hand, he had trouble sliding the bolt back to chamber around. Frustrated, he finally put the gun on the nightstand, lay back on the bed, and sipped his beer. Nemo Strait, by nature, was a worrier, and right now he had a lot to concern him. He was still thinking about the chopper that had come out of nowhere in the dark woods. Strait had watched the flight of the aircraft. It had not landed in the woods, and it did not appear to be the police. Strait had thought about going back to where they had shot Cove to make certain the guy was dead. Yet he had to be. They had fired 5 shots into him. No one could shake that. And even if the man somehow managed to live, he'd be a vegetable, incapable of telling anyone what had happened. Still, Strait didn't like it, and he had scanned every news program he could find in the hopes of learning that an FBI undercover agent had been found dead. And he also wanted to hear that there were no clues to the killers. He rubbed his shoulder. Strait's blood was out there, of course, but they had to have something to match his DNA to, and his was not on file anywhere that he could remember. Except the army. But after more than 25 years, would they still have it? Would the stuff be any good? He doubted it. Still, he could feel it was getting close to the time he would be moving on. He had accomplished everything he had set out to do, and last night's transaction had left him with enough money to retire to just about anywhere he wanted. At first, he had thought about buying a place up in the Ozarks and passing the rest of his life doing nothing more than fishing and spending his money in increments that would arouse no suspicions. Now he was rethinking that strategy. Now he was thinking that another country might be a far better retirement venue. Well, he had heard the fishing was terrific in Greece. If Strait heard the back door open, he made no indication. It had been a long day, and his painkiller was wearing off. He took another slug of it and wiped his lips. The door to his bedroom slowly opened. Again, Strait seemed not to notice. The person moved into the room. Strait turned on some music on the radio next to his bed. The figure moved closer to the bed. Finally, Strait stopped what he was doing and slowly looked around.
"I didn't think you were going to come tonight," he said, thinking with one arm I wasn't good enough anymore.
He took a drink of his beer and then put it down. Gwen stood looking down at him. She wore the red dress she had had on at the party, but her high heels had been replaced with flats. Her gold anklet glittered a bit in the wash of light. She moved closer to him, her gaze drifting to his shoulder.
"Does it hurt much?"
"Just every time I breathe."
"Which horse did it?"
"Bobby Lee."
"He's not known as a kicker."
"Every horse can be a kicker."
"I forgot. You're the expert."
She smiled demurely, but there was something behind the look that was not nearly so playful.
No, but I grew up with the damn things. I mean, you don't learn this stuff in a year or even in 10 years. Look at Billy. He's a fast learner, but he still basically knows shit about running a horse farm.
You're right. That's why we hired you and your good old boys.
She paused.
You're our white knight, Nemo.
Straight lit up a cigarette.
Yeah, that's a good one.
She surprised him by reaching over and taking a drink of his beer.
Don't you have anything stronger than this? She asked.
Bourbon.
Get it.
While he pulled out the bottle and glasses, she perched on the bed and rubbed her calf. She touched the anklet, a gift from Billy. It had both their names engraved on it. Straight handed her a full glass, and she downed it in one pass and handed it back to him for a refill.
Take it easy on that stuff, Gwen. It's not candy.
It is to me. Besides, I didn't drink at the party. I was a good girl.
Straight's gaze ran down her long body, took in her bare legs, her ample bosom.
Every man in the place wanted to jump your bones.
Gwen did not smile at this compliment.
Not every man.
Hey, Billy's getting up there. Can't do it on demand anymore. Hell, I'm getting to that point myself faster than I'd like.
It has nothing to do with age.
She reached over and took a puff of the cigarette and then handed it back.
And when your husband hasn't touched you in years, it tends to drive a woman to other sources.
She glanced at him.
I hope you recognize your limited role here.
He shrugged.
A man has to take what he can get. But it ain't right that he still blames you for what happened to your son.
He has every right. I was the reason David was at that school.
You didn't order them crazy frees in there to shoot up the place, now did you?
No, and I didn't ask the FBI to send down a bunch of men who were too cowardly or incompetent to save my son either.
Kinda strange having the FBI right here on the farm.
We knew that was a very real possibility.
Straight smiled.
Come here to protect you.
Gwen said dryly,
from ourselves.
Well, the little bomb in Billy's phone that I detonated when Webb tossed it out the car, that threw them off the scent for good. They're not looking in our direction.
Webb London is a lot smarter than you probably think.
Oh, I know he's real smart. I ain't going around underestimating anybody on this one.
Gwen took a sip of her second bourbon, slipped off her flats, and slid back on the bed. He caressed her hair.
I've been missing you, lady.
Billy could care less, but it's a little difficult to move around with the FBI patrolling your property.
Well, said Straight, now it's just Webb and Romano. He's another one to watch. X-SWAT and Delta, that dude can be bad news. See it in his eyes.
Gwen rolled over on her stomach, propped up on her elbows, and stared at him. His eyes were locked on her cleavage, which was now spilling out of her dress. She noted his gaze, but apparently his attention did not interest her.
I wanted to ask you about the horse trailers.
Gwen's question caused his gaze to lift from her breasts to her face.
What about them?
I grew up on a horse farm too, Nemo. You had some of those rigs customized in a very special way, and I want you to tell me why.
He grinned.
Can't a man have any secrets?
She got up on her knees and slid closer to him. She started kissing his neck, and his hand went first to her chest and then moved to her bottom. He hiked her dress up to her waist and discovered she had on no underwear.
Good thinking. With me as horny as I am, you would have just gotten those panties ripped off anyway.
She moaned into his ear as his fingers moved over her. One of her hands went to his face and then down to the neckline of his T-shirt. And then with a flash, she had ripped the shirt down the front and sat back. Her movement surprised Straight so much that he almost fell off the bed. He followed her gaze to the blood-stained bandage on his shoulder.
Mighty odd bruise from a horse kick, said Gwen.
The two stared at each other, and before he could stop her, Gwen picked up Strait's pistol, chambered around, and drew aims at various points in the room. She looked at the gun.
The balance on this is off, and you really should get some lithium sights, Nemo. They do make a difference with night fire.
A bead of sweat appeared on Strait's forehead.
You handle that thing real good.
Horses weren't the only thing I grew up with in Kentucky. My father and brothers were very active members of the NRA. I would have joined too, only it wasn't deemed ladylike by my parents.
Hey, that's real good to know. I'm a member too.
He breathed a sigh of relief when she set the safety, yet she still didn't put the gun down.
So what is it?
She asked.
Drugs?
Look, baby, why don't we just have a drink and get to...
The pistol came up and the safety went off.
I came here to screw you, Nemo, not to be screwed with. It's late and I'm starting to get tired. If you want any candy tonight, you better cut the bullshit.
Okay, okay. Damn, you are something.
He took a quick belt of his drink and wiped his mouth with his hand.
It's drugs, but not the kind you think.
Prescription stuff with a kick twice that of morphine. No lab, no border problem. Just steal 'em or work a deal with the pharmacy assistant making 8 bills an hour. This OxyContin stuff started rural, but I'm taking it to the big cities. About damn time us country folks got a piece of the pie. It's sweet.
And you're using East Winds as your base and our trailers to move your product.
Well, we've been distributing the drugs, mostly in pickup trucks, prearranged drop spots, and even through the mail. Then I got the idea to use the horse trailers. We move horses across state lines all the time, and if the cops stop us for permits and papers on the trailers or the horses, the smell's going to keep them away from where the stuff is, and I don't know of many dogs trained to sniff out prescription drugs. I've been shuffling men and trailers around so you and Billy wouldn't notice. The run we made to Kentucky was our biggest yet.
He raised his beer in salute, apparently to himself. Gwen eyed his wound.
But not a complete success.
Well, you do something illegal, you gotta be prepared to face some risk.
Did this risk come from your demand chain, or maybe the cops?
Come on now, honey, what does it matter?
You're right. I guess either way, it means you've put us at risk. You were supposed to be working for us, Nemo, full time.
Well, a person's got to look out for himself. And it was too good a deal to pass up. And I ain't breaking my back on horse farms the rest of my life, okay?
I hired you for a specific purpose, because of your unique qualities and experience.
Right, the fact that I got a damn good head on my shoulders, know folks who don't mind killing people, and I can put together some pretty slick explosives. Well, I done that, baby.
He ticked the points off his fingers. A federal judge, a U.S. attorney, a defense counsel.
Ledbetter, Watkins, and Wingo. A judge with no backbone, a prosecutor with no guts, and a defense counsel who would gladly defend his own mother's killer if the guy had enough money. I consider that we did society a service by ending their pathetic lives.
Right, and we took out HRT and then suckered them into wiping out the damn freeze. Man, we tricked a veteran undercover into thinking that he'd come upon the drug operation to end all drug operations. We set that place up like something straight out of the movie The Sting.
He looked at her and his features grew grim.
So I delivered for you, lady. So what I do on my time is my business. I ain't your damn slave, Gwen.
She kept the pistol pointed at him.
Webb London is still standing.
Well, hell, you said to keep him that way. Make him look like a coward. We got lucky when I found out the shrink he was seeing was an old acquaintance of mine from Vietnam. So everybody thinks Webb's rotten to the core. This whole thing took a lot of planning, had a lot of risk. Let me tell you, we executed it to damn near perfection, and you got it for pennies on the dollar, because I think what happened to your son stinks.
He looked at her with a hurt expression.
And I don't even remember you saying thank you.
Her tone was businesslike, her expression unreadable.
Thank you. How much money have you made off the drugs?
Surprised, he lowered his drink.
Why?
After what I've paid you and what we've sunk into this place, Billy and I are in the hole. They'll be coming to take his antique car collection pretty soon, because we borrowed against that, too. We could use some free cash flow, because we're going to be selling out and moving on, too. Especially since however you got that injury tells me that one day somebody's going to come knocking on our door with questions I don't have answers for. And frankly, I've had enough of Virginia Hunt country. I'm thinking our next stop is a small island where it never gets cold and there are no damn phones.
You want me to give you a share of my drug money? He asked incredulously.
Actually, demand would be more accurate. Nemo spread his hands.
Well, I wasn't kidding, darling. We got some good prices for those fine yearlings, he said in a very sincere tone.
She laughed at him. This place never made any money before we bought it, and it's not going to make any money now, fine yearlings or not.
Well, what do you want from me?
It's very simple. I want you to tell me how much you have made from the drugs.
He hesitated for a moment before answering.
Not that much, actually.
She raised the pistol and pointed it in his direction.
How much?
Okay, about $1 million. There, you satisfied?
She gripped the pistol with both hands and took very careful aim at his head.
Last chance.
How much, Nemo? Okay, don't get your panties all twisted.
He let out a deep breath.
Tens of millions.
Then I want 20%. And then we go our separate ways.
20 damn percent?
Wired to an offshore account. I'm assuming that a great businessman like yourself has set up some secret account somewhere to hide your millions. Excuse me, tens of millions.
But look, I got expenses.
Right, you probably paid your help off in pills, since most of them are too stupid to know better. And since running prescription drugs means low cost, lower risk, I imagine your profit margins are pretty nice. And I don't think you've been paying taxes on the income. And on top of that, you use our equipment that we paid for to move your product, and also the manpower we're paying to work the farm to do it for you. So there was very little capital out of your pocket, and that makes for an even greater return on investment. And so, yes, I want my share. We'll call it rental fees for equipment and labor. And you're lucky it's only 20%.
She slid a hand enticingly down her front.
In fact, you're fortunate that I'm in a generous mood right now.
Strait just shook his head.
What, was your dad a damn MBA too?
Billy and I have gotten the wrong end of the deal for long enough. At least we're still alive. My son only had 10 years. Does that sound fair to you?
And if I say no?
I'll shoot you.
In cold blood. A religious woman like yourself.
I pray for my son every day, but I can't say that my faith in God is absolute anymore. And I can always call the cops.
Nemo smiled and shook his head.
And tell them what? I'm dealing drugs? And oh, yeah, I killed a bunch of people for you? What's your leverage?
My leverage, Nemo, is that I don't give a damn anymore what happens to me. That's the best leverage of all. I have nothing more to lose because I've already lost everything.
What about Billy?
He knows nothing about this. And now it's 25%.
Well, hell.
Keeping the gun trained on him, she stood, unzipped her dress, and let it fall to the floor, then stepped out of it completely naked.
And here's the sweetener, she said. Going once, going twice.
Deal, said Nemo straight, as he held his arms out for her.
The sex was hard and left them both breathless. Strait collapsed on his back, nursing his aching arm, while Gwen let her legs down and stretched them out. Strait had almost driven her right through the box springs and twisted her legs back into positions they were never meant to go. She would be hurting for a couple days, but it was a wonderful pain, something her husband had withheld from her for so long. And not just the sex, but also the love, which was far worse. In public, he made a pretense of affection. In private, he bothered not at all. He had never been abusive to her. On the contrary, it was extreme diffidence coupled with irreversible melancholy. Being ignored had never been so painful. Gwen sat back against the headboard, lit a cigarette, and blew fat rings to the ceiling. She lay there for about an hour, and then reached over and put a hand on Strait's hairy chest, slowly rousing him.
"That was wonderful, Nemo."
"Uh-huh," he grunted back.
"Think you can do it again before sunrise?"
He opened one eye. "Damn it, woman, I ain't 19, and I got a bad wing. You get me some of that Viagra crap, maybe I can."
"In your line of work, I'd think you'd be tired of pills."
He raised his head slightly and looked at her. "Hey, you wouldn't entertain the notion of moving to Greece with me, would you? It'd be a hell of a lot of fun, guaranteed."
"I have no doubt, but my place is with my husband, whether he knows it or not."
He slumped back down.
"Yeah, I thought you'd say that."
"And you're really just looking to cut me out of my 25%.
"Okay, I give up."
"Nemo?"
"Yeah?"
"What do you think happened to Ernest B. Free?"
He sat up, used her cigarette to light his, then sat back next to her and put an arm around her.
"Hell if I know. That one's really got me stumped. I thought he'd be at the compound HRT hit, but he wasn't. Unless the feds are lying, but why would they? They bag him, they'd be screaming that to the world. And the guy I used to set up the freeze also planted the drugs and other stuff down there, including some made-up files on the judge and two lawyers. He actually knows old Ernie, so he would have seen and recognized him if he was down there, even if they had him real well hidden."
She ran her fingers through his hair.
"Webb and Romano are leaving soon."
"Yeah, I know. Good riddance. They're cramping my style. Although it was pretty sweet driving 50,000 stolen pills right out under the feds' noses. But to tell you the truth, I kind of like those guys. If they found out what we've done, they'd try and put us on death row. But except for that, I wouldn't mind popping back a few brews with them from time to time."
Strait glanced over at Gwen, and the look on her face startled him.
"I loathe Webb London," she said.
"Look, Gwen, I know what happened with your son and all."
She exploded and beat the mattress with her fists.
"It makes me sick to see his face. They're worse than the freeze. They come rushing in to save the world and innocent people start dying. Those people swore to me that once HRT was called in, no one else would die. And then they paraded around Webb London as this big hero while my son lies dead in his grave. I'd love to shoot them all down myself."
Strait swallowed nervously at her wild tone and words as she knelt there on the bed, her hair in her face. Her lean, naked body, every muscle tensed, made her look like a panther about to spring. He eyed the gun where she'd put it on the nightstand and was ready to make a lunge for it, but she was quicker. She pointed the gun all around the room as Strait looked on nervously. Finally, the barrel ended up pointed at Gwen herself. She looked down at it as though she wasn't sure what it was. Her finger eased closer to the trigger.
"Then why don't you do it yourself?" he said, eyeing the gun. "Kill Webb, I mean. Like you said, accidents happen, especially on horse farms."
Gwen thought about this and finally dropped her angry look and smiled at him, putting down the gun.
"Maybe I will."
"Just don't blow it, though, 'cause we're in the home stretch."
She got under the covers, snuggled against him, kissed his cheek, and put her hand under the sheet, rubbed him down there.
Just one more time, she said in a low, throaty voice, her gaze holding his.
She slid the sheet off them both and looked down and smiled.
My goodness. Who needs Viagra, Nemo?
Woman, you are playing me like Charlie Daniels plays the fiddle.
Even without the potency drug, Strait managed to satisfy her one more time, though it about killed him. Later, as Gwen dressed, he watched her.
Damn, you are a hellcat.
She zipped up her dress and held her shoes in one hand. Strait got up and started gingerly pulling his shirt over his bad arm. She looked at him.
Early morning plans?
Oh, you know how the life on a horse farm is. There's always something to do.
She turned to leave.
You know, nothing personal or anything, Gwen. But it ain't good for a person to carry that much hate around. You just got to let it go at some point, or else it'll ruin you. I was like that when my ex took the kids. At some point, you just got to let it go.
She slowly turned and looked at him.
When you've seen your only child lying dead right in front of you, with a bloody hole in his chest, Nemo, and then you lose the only other person you love because of it, when you've reached the lowest point of despair a person can reach, and then watch yourself drop even lower, then you can come and talk to me about letting go of the hate.
Chapter 51. Claire jerked up from a deep sleep that she had fallen into from exhaustion and despite her terror. She felt the fingers against her skin, and she was about to strike out at her attacker when the voice made her stop.
It's just me, Claire,
said Kevin as he lifted off her blindfold. There was no light, so Claire had to let her eyes adjust to the darkness. She looked down at Kevin, who was sitting next to her, his hands around the cuffs that held her to the wall.
I thought you were tied up, too.
He smiled and held up a small bit of metal.
I was, but I took this off one of the markers they give me to draw with. Pick the lock. I'm good with my hands.
I can see that.
Give me just one more minute, and I get you loose, too.
In less time than that, Kevin had her free. She rubbed her wrists and sat up, looked around, and eyed the door.
I take it the door's locked. Always has been. Maybe not now if they think we chained up.
Good point. She stood, taking a moment to get her balance after being off her feet for so long, a condition that was compounded by the darkness. She looked around again.
Anything we can use for a weapon, in case someone's on the other side of that door? She whispered.
Kevin went over to the cot, turned it over on its side, and unscrewed two of the metal legs. He kept one and handed the other to Claire.
You hit 'em high, and I hit 'em low, he said.
Claire nodded, without a lot of confidence, though. She wasn't sure she could hit anybody. Kevin seemed to sense her trepidation, because he added,
We only hit 'em if they're trying to hurt us, right?
Right, said Claire, a lot more firmly. They inched over to the door and tried it. It was locked. They listened intently for a bit, yet could hear no one on the other side, even though the machine-like sounds were not as loud now.
I guess we're not getting out of here until they want us to, said Claire.
Kevin eyed the door and stepped back.
I ain't never noticed that before.
What?
That the door hinges are on the inside.
Claire looked hopeful, but only for an instant.
But we'd need a screwdriver and hammer to get them out.
Well, we got the hammer.
He held up the metal table leg.
And right here is the screwdriver.
He went over to where the cuffs that had held Claire were attached to a bolt in the wall. With Claire's help, they finally managed to unscrew the bolt from the wall, and Kevin slid off the cuffs. He held up one of the cuffs.
It got a nice edge to it, like a screwdriver.
Good thinking again, Kevin, said Claire, with considerable admiration. Here she was, feeling totally helpless, and Kevin was pulling one miracle after another out of his hat. It took them some time, and they kept stopping and listening for anyone coming. But the hinge pins finally came out. They were able to pry open the door and step through. It was dark here, too, and they stumbled along, touching the walls of the narrow corridor for guidance. The smell of chlorine was very strong now. They were confronted with another locked door that Kevin was able to pick with his pen clasp. They encountered yet another door that thankfully was unlocked. Claire took in a long breath, as did Kevin. He smiled at her.
Feels good to finally be outside.
Well, let's get going before they come and lock us back up. They moved past the covered pool, crept through the bushes, and then down a winding grass path. As they neared the end of the path, Claire could see a building far up ahead. It was the mansion. She had glimpsed it on her visit. They were at East Wind's farm.
Oh my God, she exclaimed.
Shh, said Kevin. She whispered into his ear. I know where we are. I have friends who are here. We just have to get to them.
The problem was that, in the darkness, it was hard to tell in which direction was the house that Webb and Romano were using, even with the mansion as a marker.
If they at the place where we've been locked up, how you know they really your friends?
I just know. Come on.
She took his hand and they made their way in what Claire thought was the direction of the carriage house. Long before they could reach it, however, both stiffened when they heard a vehicle coming. They ran back into the bushes and peered out. Claire's spirits plummeted. It was a truck, not the Mach or Romano's Corvette. She gasped when the truck pulled to a stop and several men with guns climbed out. Their escape had apparently been detected. She and Kevin ran deeper into the woods, such that Claire totally lost her bearings. They finally stopped, caught their breath. Kevin looked around.
I ain't never seen so many trees in one place. Can't tell which way's out.
Claire breathed deeply, attempting to get her lungs and her nerves under control. She nodded.
I know.
She studied the lay of the unfamiliar land and was attempting to make a decision on which direction they should go when they heard footsteps. Claire pulled Kevin to her and they squatted low in the underbrush. The person was on the path and walked right past them, obviously unaware of Claire's and Kevin's presence. Claire peeked out. She didn't know Gwen Canfield, and thus had no idea why a woman in a long red dress was walking barefoot through thick woods at this hour. Claire thought about calling out to her, but finally decided against it. She had no idea who their captors were. This woman could be part of that group. Once Gwen was out of sight, Claire and Kevin started moving again. They came to a darkened house, but that had a truck parked out front. Claire was debating whether to try and slip inside the place and use the phone to call the police when a man charged out of the house, jumped in his truck, and roared off.
I think that person just found out we got loose, she whispered to Kevin. Come on.
They ran to the house. Claire had noted that in his haste, the man had left the door open. They were about to go inside when they heard a sound that made Claire's stomach lurch.
He's coming back, cried out Kevin.
They raced back into the woods, even as the truck bore down on them. Pushing their way through the thick undergrowth, Claire quickly lost her shoes, and her and Kevin's clothes were being shredded by thorny vines and hard branches. They reached an open bit of ground, paused to catch their breath, but took off running again when they heard the sounds of feet crashing through the underbrush. They raced through to an open space, and Claire saw a building loom up out of the darkness.
Quick, she said to Kevin, in there.
They climbed up on a loading dock and entered the monkey house through a hole in the wall. Claire and Kevin looked around at the ruined insides of the place. Claire shivered when she observed the rusted cages. Kevin held his nose.
Damn, it stinks in here, he said.
The sounds of men, and now the baying of dogs, were growing closer.
Over there, Claire said frantically.
She climbed onto a box, boosted Kevin up and into a hole in the wall that probably once housed a ventilator fan.
Stay down and keep quiet, she told him.
Where you going?
Not far, she said. But if they find me, don't come out.
Whatever they say they'll do to me, don't come out. Do you understand?
Kevin nodded slowly.
Claire, he said. She turned back. Please be careful.
She smiled weakly, squeezed his hand, and climbed back down. She looked around for a moment and then crept out through a gash in the rear wall. Once she was outside, the sounds of the dogs was even more terrifying. They must have given the animals something with her and Kevin's scent on it. She tore off a bit of her dress, grabbed a small rock, tied it inside the strip of material, and threw it as far away from the monkey house as she could. Then she ran off in the opposite direction. She reached the woods again, slid down an embankment, and halted at the bottom. She looked around, trying to gauge the direction the sounds of men and dogs were coming from. Unfortunately, because of the topography, the noises were echoing all around. She forded a small creek, falling down halfway across and soaking herself. She struggled up and managed to scale a small embankment on the other side, then found herself on flat land. She was so tired now. Part of her just wanted to lie here and wait for them to find her. Yet Claire pushed herself up and ran. When she reached another steep climb, she gripped a sapling and used it to thrust herself up. At the top, she surveyed the land. Off in the distance, she saw a light, and then another, and another, all in pairs. A road. She took several deep breaths and took off at a steady jog. Her feet were torn and bleeding, but she didn't allow the pain to slow her down. She had to get help. She had to get help for Kevin. The sounds of the men and dogs were gone now, and she allowed herself the small hope that she might actually manage to succeed in escaping. She crawled the last few feet to the road and sat in the ditch for a moment, the tears spilling from her, partly from exhaustion, fear, and having gained her freedom. She heard a car coming, stood and ran into the road, waving her arms and screaming for help. At first, it didn't appear the vehicle was going to stop at all, and Claire realized that she must look like some lunatic. But the vehicle finally slowed and then stopped. She ran to the passenger door and pulled it open. Her first sight was of Kevin, sitting in the front seat, his mouth gagged, his arms and legs bound. The second sight was of Nemo Strait, pointing a gun at her.
"Hey, Doc," he said. "You need a ride?"